What we realized in the process of hiring a management company was that this was actually the opportunity to continue our family legacy. Rather than feeling like we were under pressure to sell or didn't have the capital or the wherewithal to run the business anymore, we have made a decision which we think will make it more sustainable for us to keep the property in our family for generations to come.
Stories tell everything. When someone tells a story, it resonates.
We're allies in trying to keep the attention and the money and the conversation local.
We've always found once we get people to Vermont, they love it here.
And it breaks down those stereotypical views of what people would otherwise think is happening up in Vermont.
Welcome to Learning Life, where we talk to Vermonters about their businesses, aspirations, and stories of life in the Green Mountains. I'm your host, John Toda. Let's get into it. Rachel Vandenberg, welcome to Learning Life.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's so nice to have you here live with us in the Dialed Studio at Hula. So thank you for coming here, and we're excited to learn more about your story.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with you.
So now I start with everyone kind of learning a little bit about either their journey to Vermont or what it was like growing up here. And obviously, you're a homegrown success story for us.
That's right.
And and you grew up in Stowe. So tell us about what it was like growing up in Stowe and how that kind of led into what you're doing today, a little bit of the background.
Yeah, sure. So I was actually born in Florida and came to Stowe when I was six. My parents had been up to Stowe on vacation and my dad was in hospitality and so was my mom. And he had the dream of owning his own business and hotel. So they bought the Gray Fox Inn in Stowe, Vermont, and it was about 19-room bed and breakfast at the time. And so that was really what started my youth in Stowe and when I was 6 years old. So growing up in Stowe, I mean, it's really an idyllic lifestyle. I mean, you're in the middle of the Green Mountains and lots of outdoor space and small rural town. Growing now, but you know, at the time it still is small, but it was substantially smaller back then. And I just can remember taking my bike out with friends. You didn't lock bikes, you know, you just played, did lots of outdoor things together and a lot of outdoor activities, skiing, learning to ski. I was a figure skater, very much centered around athletics and the outdoors growing up. And yeah, I lived in the hotel. We had an apartment above the front desk and restaurant area. And so from a very early age, I understood what it meant to run a hotel, deal with difficult guests. And my parents worked a lot. They worked from breakfast all the way until dinner, and they took a break in the middle of the day. Back then, you had what was called a BP or an EP plan, and that was like either a breakfast plan or a breakfast and a dinner plan. And everybody ate like family style in the hotel. So it was an all-encompassing job for them. And I was soon roped in, stood on a chair at the dishwasher, you know, to wash dishes after meals. And I rang a dinner bell along the corridors when dinner was ready to be served. Hospitality runs through and through.
Yeah. It's such a great story. And I think so many of us came to those inns at Stowe and other resort communities in Vermont. And it's kind of what gave you that love and the desire to come here and kind of be able to live here. And you lived it firsthand. Did you go from kind of growing up in that hospitality industry? Did you know then that this is what you wanted to do? Did you go directly into it? or how did that work?
Absolutely not. I ran the other direction, in fact. I refused to take any sort of business courses in college, studied political science. I was much more of the social studies back then, and I still care about these topics, but civil rights, human rights, and ended up going into the development fields and lived abroad in the Netherlands for 9 years, worked for international organizations focused on sustainable economic development.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. A little bit different than than what you grew up in. Yeah. And so, but you went to the Netherlands, and this is one of the things I think is fascinating about your story, because I was there, I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago. And what struck me was how similar it felt to Vermont in the landscape and the amount of green that you see.
Yes.
And did you, what was the experience like? You lived there for almost a decade, I guess, there. So what was that like transitioning to the Netherlands and then coming back?
Yeah, it was there are a lot of similarities because there's a lot of farmland. The climate is sort of similar, but they don't have the elevation, and there's just no mountains, so it's very flat, which is great for biking because it's a very you bike everywhere. So thank God there's no mountains.
You feel like you're a very good cyclist there.
Yes, yes, exactly. Other than that, that's kind of where the similarities end, because it's definitely a different culture of living over there. I really very much liked my time there and formed great relationships. I also have a lot of family over there because my dad is from there, and I ended up meeting my husband there, and he's Dutch, so a lot of Dutch roots.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of ties.
Yeah,
that's really cool. And so then what ended up bringing you and your husband back? And did you come directly to Vermont from there?
Yeah, so we had our first two children, twins, were born in the Netherlands. And we came on vacation back to Stowe. And we had booked a flight from Amsterdam to Boston. And we're driving up at Christmas, just before the holiday, you know, up 93 to 89, you know, the mountains start showing up and the snow starts lightly falling. And during that vacation and a lot actually starting on that drive up to Vermont, my husband and I started discussing, you know, we had felt like we were at a crossroads to do something different in our lives. We said, well, what if we took over the family business? And I could not actually believe it had come out of my mouth, but it did. And so we just kept talking about it throughout the vacation. And towards the end of the vacation, we were all sitting in my parents' living room and my dad was reading the newspaper. He had it kind of in front of his face. I said, hey, we have something to talk to you about. And we said it, and the newspaper just stayed up in covering his face. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. He was actually trying to sell the hotel and kind of, you know, get ready to retire and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, and then the rest was history.
That's great. And now was it, what was the name of the hotel at that time?
So their first hotel was the Grey Fox Inn.
Yep.
And that's where I grew up. And when I was in high school, they bought the second hotel called the Sun and Ski Inn, which is the hotel that my husband and I took over.
Got it, got it. So a totally different hotel at this point.
Yeah.
And so you took it over. And also now it's got the bowling alley and it's got a golf park there too as well, right?
Yeah. So my dad, over 25 years ago, had the idea of building the miniature golf course, which is literally a golf course in miniature. So it's not like with windmills and things like that. We have real sand traps, like kind of hilly contours and that sort of thing. We built together Stowe Bowl, an 8-lane boutique bowling lounge in 2016 was when it was completed.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I know. I see it all the time when we drive past going to Stowe.
Yeah.
And you see it and you're like, oh, that's such a great idea.
It's super fun.
Yeah, yeah, that's so cool. And so now tell us a little bit about, so 10 years, you and your husband took it over. Tell us a little bit about what was that experience? Were there things that changes that as you were coming into the family business or really kind of coming back into the family business? I know there's, you know, real history.
Oftentimes, in general, I think businesses are a reflection of the business owner, right? Mm-hmm. And the ownership was evolving. My parents are still part owners, but it was evolving, and the face of the business was evolving to me and my husband, and we had two children. So our clientele when we arrived was actually an older clientele, aging, but also families. But when we came to the property, you know, we also realized we had this great asset with the golf park. And then when we started talking about building the bowling lounge, it made sense to really embrace families and target families as our main clientele. And that was really a reflection of us. And we were a young family, and we continued to build out the property and reshape and evolve it to be the kind of place where we would want to stay with our now three children. You know, what is convenient? What is fun? And how do you make a great experience for families with children?
Yeah, that's a great point. And so you grew up in the hotel when you were a kid. Now are your kids doing the same, or do you do it differently?
Yeah, so when we arrived, we lived in a house on the property, so it was kind of similar. There was definitely more separation because when I grew up at the Grey Fox Inn, we didn't have, we lived actually in the hotel. My kids lived at a house on the property, but separated. So there was more of that, some more boundaries between work and family life. We have since moved off property to create some more separation there.
Yeah. And so tell us what today, current state, and I know you're going through a pivot with the business. Tell us a little bit about the hotel now and what your plans are going forward for the future.
Sure. So my husband and I have been running the hotel for over 10 years, and we're the kind of people who are always looking, how can we improve? How can we make the next step? How can we further professionalize? Back then when we took over, we were still taking reservations by fax message and typing in, keying in numbers of credit cards and things like that. There was still a lot of outdated technology. All of that has changed, and we really pushed that. As the technologies were improving, we were really trying to stay on the cutting edge of that. And just overall, always trying to think of how do we improve the experience, and that was what led to Stow Bowl. But we do a lot of remodeling. We try to stay up to date as much as possible. And we came to another crossroads, basically, in our life, where the pandemic, staffing shortages and the continued staffing shortages today, we're making it really hard to work on our business at a higher level, really at an ownership level. We were pulled back into the day-to-day operations very frequently. I basically spent 2 years helping in the housekeeping department. My husband has been cooking in the kitchen. He didn't know. He was not a line cook by trade, right, and by any means. He was in the kitchen cooking for like probably 18 to 24 months on a consistent basis.
Wow.
And we realized that if we were going to continue on our path of always improving and thinking of what the next phase of the future for the business was going to be, that we couldn't keep operating in that manner. And I had been researching management companies, and, you know, we'd also talked about maybe hiring a general manager to create some more space between us and the daily operations, that sort of thing. And ultimately, we saw also what was happening around in Stowe. There were more hotels changing hands in terms of ownership, which also really nowadays immediately means a management company is coming in. It's harder and harder to buy a hotel and run it yourself, depending on what the size is. I mean, a small bed and breakfast is possible, but larger hotels are typically owned by investors, not by operators. We vetted some different management companies, settled on one that was really matching our family values and the kind of company that we wanted to work with. And we contracted with them and made the transition this past April.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It is. And so tell me, I have a couple questions about that. One, I think just on the larger view, you grew up in this industry in Stowe, and you've seen, and obviously we've all seen Stowe kind of become like that big resort and have that type of investment in it. What do you think of that impact on the hospitality industry? And what do you think for a small bed and breakfast owner or someone trying to make this work, what's your advice for them?
It's kind of bittersweet. I mean, we all kind of look back with nostalgia to the old days where you would go up and down the mountain road and every hotel was owned by an iconic family. Yeah. You know, and there was this legacy, and that's really changing. Those kinds of families are getting out of the business and really not there anymore. But interestingly, what we realized in the process of hiring a management company was that this was actually the opportunity to continue our family legacy. Mm-hmm. And rather than feeling like we were under pressure to sell or didn't have the capital or the wherewithal to run the business anymore, we have made a decision which we think will make it more sustainable for us to keep the property in our family for generations to come. I mean, there's really essentially no reason to sell unless we want to create, you know, cash flow. Right. But we can continue to pass this property down to our children. And they can either choose to take a hospitality career path, or they can choose to be the investor owner who manages it from a much more helicopter, you know, viewpoint in terms of an asset, like asset management. So I see a lot of opportunity there, actually. For someone wanting to come into the business, I think there still are a lot of opportunities. You can start small with an 8-bedroom bed and breakfast, and that's definitely doable. If you're set your sights on that and raising capital. I mean, and there's also all kinds of new investment models where people are coming together in groups to invest in hotels. There are a lot of efforts to increase hotel ownership among women in the industry, and doing this by allowing them to actually invest small shares of money into a larger fund, which makes them part owner of a hospitality company. Yeah. I think that's great. I mean, it's just different. It's not anymore, I'm going to buy a hotel and I'm going to operate it at the same time. Usually people are going to work their ways up through the ranks at working for some kind of hotel, and then, you know, they might have aspirations to becoming part owner someday, or they happen to have a really big pot of money themselves and want to make a good investment in the hospitality sector.
You know, the way you put it is that, you know, sometimes to maintain the good quality level that you want and to be able to own a resort or a hotel, you kind of have to go that management company route. And, you know, because it gets harder and harder to compete, I'm sure, when everyone else is consolidating in that way.
Yeah. And that was exactly another big reason why we decided to work with a management company, because we felt like there were more coming into town and they just have the ability to scale things. They have their centralized processes and departments that just make it more efficient and cheaper to run. And with that much cumulative knowledge and experience, you learn from the other properties that they manage so that we become better as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a refreshing perspective on it too, because, you know, you're looking to do more things rather than just running your property. Obviously, I would imagine you didn't have much free time prior to running all of the hands-on activities and having kids. So that freed up all this time. What's the big passion for you, and what is it that you wanted to do? And obviously, I think it's within the industry, but kind of a different perspective on it.
Yeah, sure. When I was evolving as general manager and owner of the hotel, and when you're owning your own business, you've got to do everything. I mean, I was learning marketing and finance and operations and technology and all of it. And that's actually the beauty of small business and of running a hospitality business, because you learn all these amazing skills. But I think with any person, when you're developing in your career, you also find out along the way, one, what you're really good at, and two, what are you really passionate about? So through that process, I realized that leadership development was really the direction I wanted to go. And that's what I enjoyed most about the job. I also it was also the most challenging and difficult at times leading team members. But I was always trying to get better at that and be a better leader. And in that process, I did a lot of work on myself as a leader and becoming a better boss to my team members. And I realized at a certain point that this is what I wanted to help inspire in other people. And that led me to learning more about coaching, also how to use coaching when you are managing team members, using a coach approach in your management and leadership style. And then ultimately, I started thinking about it in terms of coaching people externally on leadership in the travel and hospitality sector.
Very cool. Very cool. And so now when you say travel professionals, for our listeners, who are you typically coaching? Are they hotel owners and operators like in most cases?
Could be, but it could be anybody working in travel and hospitality. It could be marketing people that are working for hotels or travel companies. I typically focus on people who are managing other people or managing big processes or departments, things like that, and want to really build their leadership skills.
And what do you see? And obviously, I think leadership, there's a lot of principles that really work in all different sectors and different verticals. But what do you see as kind of the big leadership challenge in the travel industry, specifically with the people that you're working with?
I think that, well, the first thing that's coming to mind is that, this is probably, I think, in a lot of industries a challenge, is that it's lonely at the top, right? So, you face a lot of challenges, and you face challenges with managing people and doing it effectively, and you need just some support and guidance. And I think that where I struggled was in working with my staff members, managing performance, for example, of staff members. A lot of what came out up also were, how do you handle people's mental health challenges? And or how do you manage change in an organization, which obviously became a huge issue for the pandemic? So those are kind of some of the topics that come up, and it all ultimately comes back to first a level of self-awareness about who you are as a leader, where you're at and what you want to improve. And a lot of it is honestly just starts with building confidence. A lot of leaders feel a bit insecure about their leadership abilities, and really they have the leadership abilities already. It just kind of needs to be refined and strengthened, and really just strengthen their confidence through a coaching process.
Yeah, I think it's great. And now, are you doing this specifically in Vermont? Because obviously there's lots of travel professionals here, or are you looking outside of Vermont and going anywhere?
I could coach anyone anywhere. I would say a lot of my focus is actually outside of Vermont. I have, I'm building a network of travel colleagues, and I speak at conferences. I have moderated panels. I've been on panel discussions at conferences, and I also have a podcast myself now. So my audience is and my relationships are much broader than Vermont, but I also have really great relationships in Vermont as well with the tourism community.
Very cool. Yeah. And so for people who are interested, and maybe they're in the travel industry, maybe they want to get into the travel industry, what kind of content? I think you're creating a lot of content now, and it's very cool. You have your podcast show, so we definitely have to learn about that.
Yeah.
What do you have out there available for people to learn more about, and where can they get it?
Sure. So I do a lot of work on LinkedIn. So I post on LinkedIn, but I also send out a monthly newsletter through LinkedIn newsletters. I also have a blog on my website, and I have my podcast. It's called the Travel Leader Podcast. And it all kind of falls under the umbrella of my business, the Travel Leader Coach. And essentially that content is all geared towards hot topics in hospitality and tourism and trends in tourism or things that are happening. But increasingly, it's really focused on leadership development in the industry.
Very cool. Very cool. And so for people who are thinking of getting into the travel industry in one form or another, but specifically they might want to run a bed and breakfast, they might want to try it out and maybe get started small and then hopefully they're lucky enough to have the problem that you did and have to figure out a strategy to scale. What's some advice that you'd say to someone or someone who's just getting into the industry? How do they kind of get their foot in the door and learn a little bit more about it?
That's a great question. I think if I could do it over again, because I mean, I did grow up in the business, but if I could do it over again, I would work for a bigger hospitality company first and learn different departments of a bigger company. And then I would go out on my own. And that's actually what a lot of people, that's what a lot of people do. You know, they work in the industry for a bigger company. They learn the tricks of the trade and they become inspired to create something of their own.
Yeah. No, that's awesome advice. Yeah. And for anybody who's listening who may not be from Vermont and doesn't know much about Stowe. Obviously, you are one of the great advertisements for Stowe. You grew up there. You know it very well. But you've also been other places and come back. What should everybody know about Stowe and why should they be visiting it and trying out some of our local hotels and bed and breakfasts?
Yeah. Well, Stowe just is, it's really a paradise. I mean, I live there and obviously I'm biased, but and biased because I have a business, but it truly is the people that live there and work there actually do live that lifestyle. And that lifestyle is very active, outdoors. You know, it's a slower pace of life. We really enjoy life while working. We can be very busy with careers and children and all of that, but I feel like we have a lot more like overall well-being, because of the environment that we live in. And what makes Stowe so awesome is that it just has this complete offering of things. It's historic, you know, so we have this beautiful historic Main Street. We have a lot of restaurants, we have boutique shops, amazing landscapes and views. We have so many different kinds of sports that you can try, hiking. We also have water sports if you go to the Waterbury Reservoir, which is nearby. There's mountain biking, Nordic skiing, downhill skiing, snowmobiling, snowshoeing. There's just so many great opportunities.
Well put. And I know when we moved here, I think one of the things that always shocked me was the amount of people you see outdoors in the middle of a workday.
Yeah.
You know, right? Mm-hmm. Even more so in Stowe. And I think the hardest thing being in Vermont is fitting it all in. Because,
absolutely. Right? Or which piece of equipment can I buy next?
I know, right?
to pursue my outdoor passions. That is always the struggle.
I know. And then you see someone else with some new toys and you're like, oh, I need that bike now.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you actually, you know, you see more people investing their disposable income on things like that than things like cars or... Yes. You know, we a lot of us just drive, you know, a regular old Subaru around. So that's the car of choice. But our mountain bike might actually be more expensive than the car we drive.
I know. I think that's the funniest thing. And you love that. That's the way it should be, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Well, Rachel, and so for our listeners, if you want to learn more about Rachel, follow her on LinkedIn. We'll have all of your links down in our show notes. So
Perfect.
You can check everything out there. Thank you so much for coming in. It was a great story.
Thanks, John. It's been great talking to you.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for being here each week. As you know, we have new episodes that come out all the time. So wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe, leave us comments. We'd love to hear from you guys. And until our next episode, happy learning. Hey, Hey everyone, John Tota here. I want to thank you for tuning in to another Learning Life episode. We love our Learning Life community and are so grateful for your support. We'd appreciate it if you could take a minute to rate us and write a review wherever you're listening right now. Your ratings and comments help new people find the show so we can keep growing our community and bringing great episodes to you.